questions before we...
No, good morning as well, Your Honor. May I?
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'm Gerard Piccolo, representing the appellant, Perry Hines. There are two issues in this case. I'll submit the issue with regard to sentence. However, the main issue in this particular case is what is needed to obtain an instruction on entrapment, basically instruction under NJI 7.7. Now, everybody agrees that the standard is more than a scintilla or beyond a scintilla evidence. And everybody agrees that an entrapment defense required has basically two elements. Number one, whether there is a predisposition, which I don't think in this particular record there is any predisposition. And the second is whether there's some sort of inducement by the state actor to perhaps entrap the defendant in this particular case. Inducement can be persuasion, it can be pleas to sympathy, it can be, for instance, a fraudulent representation or a lie, whatever it may be.
It's not mere opportunity.
It's not mere opportunity. Now, I think Your Honor realizes there is a kind of a gray area between opportunity and inducement, and that's really what we're talking about here. But if I may, I refer back to what the burden is, and the burden is just beyond a scintilla, which is not a terribly onerous burden. So if you are beyond a scintilla, then you get the instruction. That's the way I understand
it. So what do you point to in this record that factually gets to something?
Okay. Well, you have exhibit number 11, and exhibit number 11 is the text messaging between Lily Williamson, which is Officer Larkin, but you have the text messages between Lily Williamson and Mr. Hines. When, for instance, when there was an exchange of pictures, there was talk about exchanging pictures. Lily Williamson responds that, I guess Mr. Hines said, "I'm sorry I sent the picture," whatever it may be, and Lily Williamson says, "I don't think any less of you for doing that." Furthermore, when the age 14 is disclosed, remember, because Lily Williamson had said she was 16, and then later on says, no, I'm really 14. What does Mr. Hines respond to that particular? He says, whoa, wait a minute, there are many moral issues here, all right, and kind of comes back from his original position. Furthermore, which is kind of important, when virginity is discussed, Your Honor, okay, Lily Williamson responds kind of like this, that Mr. Hines was worthy of taking her virginity. She says that. "I wouldn't be talking," or texting actually, "I wouldn't be texting you unless I didn't think you were worthy." Okay, that sounds to me like persuasion and not opportunity, Your Honor. Miss Williamson or Officer Larkin is going one step further and kind of like saying, "I'm trying to persuade you to come and have this relationship with me." Furthermore, Miss Williamson, actually Lily Williamson, also invented a story about alcoholic parents, about how she wasn't fed at home, about her parents abusing her and leaving her alone on many occasions alone in the house. And also, Lily Williamson says that she's mistreated by, you know, boys her age, whatever it is. These are, again, efforts by the state actor, all right, to go to the sympathy of Mr. Hines. And you see a lot of instances.
How does that relate to entrapment, though? Is the theory that there's a plea to sympathy, so Mr. Hines feels sorry for this Lily Williamson, and this feeling of sympathy prompts him to entice her to have sex? I don't know. I understand.
Well, I wouldn't say entice her to have sex, Your Honor, but that's a...
Entice her to what?
To continue the relationship, which may ultimately end there. I don't know. I mean, it never obviously ended up in anything other than Mr. Hines being arrested. But the point is that is an inducement, that's a plea to sympathy to continue to talk with me and continue to go on, and let's go further than that. All right? And that's very important. I think that's what's important is this court has always looked at what is it that the state actor is doing. And I've given you instances that are examples of what Ms. Williamson
did. What if the basic concept that the state sort of sets this trap to be?
begin with, is that a scintilla in and of itself?
Yes, it can be. For instance, in State versus Heitman, I think it's Heitman, if I remember correctly, this court relied on many factors, but acknowledged one particular factor, which is that the state engaged, at least initially, in talking to Mr. Heitman. There was some sort of idea that I don't know who it was, the officer involved, whatever it is, contacted Mr. Heitman first and then started talking about, let's renew what we were doing before.
Well, here it's the opposite, however.
I'm sorry?
Here, it's the opposite.
Yes.
Your client reached out to this Facebook person.
Yes, but also you've got to take into consideration the actions of Ms. Williamson as well. I don't think it's necessarily determinative that there was a reaching out, that's determinative whether you get the instruction or not. Remember, it's beyond a scintilla, and I don't think this court has ever focused in and that is the only sole determining factor. That's what I would say from Heitman.
But returning to the Chief's question, you're not contending that it's entrapment solely because the state is having an officer pose as someone they're not. Alone's not entrapment.
No. That would be the Heitman case, and I think the Kennedy case or whatever. I'm going to mispronounce that name. I think there has to be something more, and this court has always held that there has to be something more. Namely, let's look at what the state actor did vis-a-vis the relationship between the two parties. And if the state actor had engaged in persuasion or engaged in a plea to sympathy, that takes it beyond the scintilla, and then you get the instruction, especially where there's no predisposition.
So if the state actor brings up initially the discussion of sex, that would be an entrapment? The conversation doesn't turn that way, it's going naturally, and then
I don't think you can focus in on one particular item, Your Honor. I think you have to look at the entire context. It could possibly be that way, and it could possibly not be that way. I think you have to look at the entire context. That's what Heitman and Kennedy and Cass and then Pistol or something like that. Also, if I may, there is this other concept within the jurisprudence, within the cases, and this other concept is some sort of non-criminal reason for the behavior to the contact to occur. And it's mentioned in both Pistol and in Cass that there could be, the state takes advantage of some non-criminal sort of behavior of the defendant. And that also warrants an instruction under 7.7. In this particular case, as presented by the record of trial, obviously because I was doing it, there was the question of Mr. Hines trying to find out whether Ms. Williamson was a hacker, because he had been hacked two times before. Perhaps Ms. Williamson was a prior girlfriend that was pranking Mr. Hines.
Isn't that just a disguise sufficiency argument? I mean, if you're arguing that he went to the park that day, not with the intentions the state alleged, but he went to the park as he claimed to discourage her from talking to people like him online, or he went to the park to see if he was being pranked, then there's no crime, right? That's a challenge to whether the state proved its case. How is that entrapment?
Well, I would tell Your Honor to look at the two cases that I mentioned before, which is Cass and Pritchell, and you'll see that language is mentioned in there, in those two cases, as a non-criminal behavior which would warrant then an instruction on entrapment. I don't disagree with you, and if you look at the record, that's kind of what I argued.
Right, that was your argument at trial, yeah. Right? When you didn't get the entrapment instruction, your
right.
argument was his intentions were different than the state alleged.
Well, there wasn't a criminal intention, and right. one of the requirements, obviously, the two charges in this particular case was that there was an intent. So that would be an intent element. But it also says that Mr. Hines is allowed to get the instruction on entrapment. Because of that, from those two cases. So I would say, Your Honors, if I may, that there certainly was more than a scintilla of evidence warranting the lower court to give the instruction under 7.7. And with that, I'll save my remaining time of about 19 seconds for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, good morning to you again.
Good morning. May it please the court. Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state. This is Mr. Hines' direct appeal. His convictions for use of an electronic device to commit sexual assault, Class 1D felony, enticement by electronic communication device, Class 4 felony. Mr. Hines' assigns to the district court incorrectly denied his request for an entrapment jury instruction. And the sentences ordered by the district court were excessive, thus an abuse of discretion. Like opposing counsel, I will submit on the excessive sentence unless there's specific questions about that. To establish reversible error from a court's refusal to give a requested jury instruction, an appellant has the burden to show that the tendered instruction is warranted by the evidence. Reframed in the case of entrapment, the most recent case I found was State versus Green. When a defendant raises the defense of entrapment, the trial court must determine as a matter of law whether the defendant presented sufficient evidence to warrant the jury instruction on entrapment.
So the state's position is that the denial of the request for the entrapment instruction was not incorrect.
Right. The district court did not commit an error here. The evidence that was presented by Mr. Hines at trial did not warrant the jury instruction. Even though the burden is fairly slight with the scintilla evidence as discussed previously.
Was it correct to refuse? I'm not sure why the expression is not incorrect.
I guess I'm getting a little twisted up myself. But yes, the refusal of the jury instruction was correct.
Thank you.
Okay. The court makes this determination as a matter of law, but as previously mentioned, the defendant's evidence of inducement needs to be the scintilla to satisfy his initial burden. In State versus Cass, as referenced by opposing counsel, the inducement can be any government conduct creating a substantial risk that an otherwise law-abiding citizen would commit an offense, and that court, or this court in that case, presented a sort of non-exhaustive list of suggested conduct. But basically boiled it down to inducement consists of an opportunity plus something else. It has to go beyond just presenting the opportunity. To show inducement, the defendant must establish that it was the prosecution that set the accused in motion, is the quote. State versus Green is one of the initial cases that the state cites as the legal standard. However, the facts in that case are a little bit different from in this case. For more factually similar cases, State versus Cass, State versus Pischel, which also gets into State versus Canada and State versus Heitman, address the sort of entrapment in the case of officer posing as minor through electronic contact, sort of fact pattern. In State versus
Canada. You heard Mr. Piccolo cite instances in the record that he felt were at least a scintilla of entrapment. For example, the story about the alcoholic parents and so forth. What is your response to those specific citations that Mr. Piccolo made?
I would agree with Justice Pavick, I think, on that I don't see a correlation between the sympathy that is maybe ginned up by mentions of alcoholic parents or not being treated by boys at her school or something like that, or boyfriends as being... I guess I don't understand how you take that link and then arrive at, I was entrapped into making these sexually charged, sort of sexually explicit statements, one, two, and then you also get into sending her a picture of his genitalia, which I think, you move from, I've got alcoholic parents, okay, let me send you this picture. I guess I just don't understand the interplay there and how that creates entrapment. I would also say that these conversations take place over the course of several weeks, over three different Facebook accounts. These conversations are fairly long. The comments about alcoholic parents, the comments about, relationships going awry, number one, arise out of questions that Mr. Hines poses to the officer, but they're also a very small part of a much longer conversation. I guess getting into more of that evidence, Exhibit 11 shows that Mr. Hines contacted the Lily account seeking communication. That communication was initiated by Mr. Hines. When he switches up Facebook accounts, he is the one that then initiates conversation with the Lily account. Mr. Hines initiated discussions about Lily's appearance, age, relationship status, virginity, and sex between them, including him potentially taking her virginity. I understand the argument that opposing counsel is making, and then also the evidence shows that Mr. Hines sort of takes two steps forward and one step back and, you know, mentions virginity but then says, oh, I could never, and stuff like that. But I mean, I think that when you boil it down to, you know, the facts, you're still talking about a 50-something-year-old man talking to somebody that is a purported 14-year-old, and the very nature of the conversation. I mean, it reminds me of that H.L. Mencken quote that if somebody says it's not about money, it's about money. He's talking about virginity. He's talking about it with somebody that he believes to be 14. I think the subject matter itself, you know, sort of is sort of self-proving.
Was there persuasion on the part of the officer posing as Lily?
I would argue that the record does not show any sort of persuasion necessarily. I think that the record shows more of a participation in the conversation and replying to questions and interrogatives by Mr. Hines that sort of keeps the conversation going. It doesn't terminate the conversation. You know, when he says, you know, I think that we should exchange pictures, you know, the account doesn't say, or the officer doesn't say, you know, absolutely not, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, and instead the officer kind of deflects and tries to, you know, say that, and the officer testifies, you know, I was doing that so as to not have to send him a picture or anything like that.
Opposing counsel talks about persuasion with respect to virginity specifically, not photos.
Yeah, I think that I would disagree that there's any sort of persuasion about taking the virginity of this, you know, fictional character. Again, I think that the conversation sort of exists to, I mean, sure, there's the response of like, you know, I wouldn't be talking to you if I wasn't interested sort of thing. But again, Mr. Hines initiates the conversation about sex, about virginity, and about like, you know, maybe his sort of role in that.
So he's saying, well, maybe we'll have sex, maybe we won't, and she says, you're the one.
I would disagree that she says, you are the one, let's go have sex. The conversation is more, he again, tries to take two steps forward, starts talking about her virginity, and then tries to walk it back and be like, I could never, you know, blah, blah, blah. Also, in the context of these conversations, he also admits, I would get into severe legal trouble if I did something like this, et cetera, et cetera. But tries to walk it back, and she says, you know, essentially, you know, I would not be here talking to you if I was not at least interested, sort of thing. Not a, you know, I am interested, let's meet up. I would also say, relating to sort of that element of persuasion, you know, it's also one thing to be talking about sex, it's another thing to start putting the wheels in motion where they are going to create some sort of situation where a sexual opportunity can happen, and that is all initiated by Mr. Hines. He is the one that persistently brings up, let's meet, when are we going to meet? This happens over several different conversations, and ultimately culminates in the setting up for them to meet. I would say on the total part of it, I mean, the entire sexual basis of the conversation as it gets into either sexual history or any one of these, you know, sort of topics, it's all Mr. Hines for the most part. The officer participates to a point in order to keep the conversation going, but does not bring up these conversations, unlike, you know, the cases like State versus Canada and State versus Heitman. In Canada, the officers posted advertisements that the state uses as a springboard to what this court said, play on the defendant's emotions and desires, including repeated or eager messages that initiated much of the sexual ideas that were put into the defendant's, I would say put into his head, but, you know, put out there in order to be discussed. Similar in State versus Heitman, the officers initiated longer correspondence via numerous emails that contained essentially writing prompts that encouraged the defendant in that case to respond in sexual matters, and, you know, what would you do if, and, you know, talk to me about this, and, you know, all these other things, where you don't have the officer necessarily in here furthering the conversation, creating a more sexualized conversation than what Mr. Hines already started on his own.
Should a criminal defendant be permitted to both deny committing the offense and take the position that he or she was entrapped to commit the offense? Are those mutually exclusive?
I mean, I'm always for arguing in the alternative, I suppose, and I guess, you know, people should feel free to take whatever defense that they want to. It doesn't make sense to me. I think that it offers sort of conflicting, you know, sort of explanations as to what we're doing there. But I suppose I could see a situation where you wouldn't want to necessarily rule those things out, somebody being able to explore both angles on both sides. But I think in this case, in particular, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, his explanations are, you know, he thought that the person that he was speaking with was an ex-girlfriend playing a prank, but he never mentions this until after his arrest. The conversations don't show him trying to do an end run around this person to find out their identity, aside from asking the Lily account, are you sure you're not your parents? That he thought the person was a potential scammer he was trying to uncover, but he bought the items that, you know, the Lily account requested that he bring, that he claimed that this was going to be somebody that was older than what this person was actually reporting, that he felt sympathy for Lily and was acting as, quote, Captain Sabaho, which was his words, yet uses access to this person that he expresses sympathy for, who is shown a vulnerability to initiate sexually inappropriate conversations and exposes genitals to. So I think that in this case in particular, those two sort of circles those two things don't add up. Those two arguments don't really work together. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do we have time for rebuttal? 18 seconds. We'll give you 30 seconds.
Hopefully it won't take that long, Your Honor. I just want to respond. Again, we're not here to determine Mr. Hines' guilt or innocence. That's obviously for the jury. I think we're here to determine whether there was enough evidence to get the instruction. And again, as I mentioned before, it's beyond a scintilla. To answer your question, Your Honor, Judge Popick, it is if it's the only thing you've got. Now, one of them, I can tell you right now, as a matter of trial strategy, I would have preferred to have the instruction and I would have argued that it was entrapment. But obviously, I didn't have the instruction at trial, and I'm left kind of like holding the bag at that particular point in time. So I might have considered and probably would have argued had I gotten the instruction.
But Mr. Hines testified at trial before you knew whether you were going to get the instruction or not. And wasn't his testimony just sort of denying the requisite intent to commit the offenses?
Well, I'll allude back to what I mentioned before about the language about a non-criminal motive or non-criminal reason for the behavior as included it within the entrapment. And again, you can look at the language of both Cass and Pristol, it's in there. I don't know what else to say, but it's part of the entrapment.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll submit it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in State versus Hines, and you are excused. The next case of the day is State versus Osborne. Counsel, if you give us just a second, I believe Ms. Osborne is going to zoom in momentarily.